in a minute. Beach Steppin', the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, May 25th, 2023. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo. And last but not least, over yonder, making the magic happen here today on the beach, it's Eshowa Kid.
How y'all doing?
What's up, Esh? Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Get your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Coming up later today, brand new No Buffs, the finale podcast for us, breaking down last night's three-hour Survivor 44 episode. So lots to talk about. Join us at 1 p.m. Eastern. No Buffs has its own YouTube feed and its own podcast feed, and man, we got a lot to break down. No spoilers here, no spoilers here, but can't wait to talk about that with TK and JD. That's later. And tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we're going to host another NBA watch party on playback for Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Looking forward to that. Does it end tonight, or can the Beantown boys force a Game 6 on the weekend? Are we going to have weekend basketball? It's in the hands of Boston and
Miami.
Great
question. Yeah. Great, great question. We shall see.
Before we get to the beach and answer a few of your great questions that you sent in by way of Twitter and YouTube and email, a little bit of news. The LA Clippers general manager Michael Winger has agreed to become the president of Monumental Basketball, which is the parent company of the Washington Wizards, the Mystics in the WNBA, and the G League Go-Go. I always forget they're called the Go-Go's. Winger has served in the Clippers GM role since 2017. Prior to working with the post-Lob City Clippers, he was with the Thunder under Sam Presti, and he was also with the Cavaliers under Danny Ferry. So Michael Winger is your president of basketball operations when it comes to all three of those entities under the Monumental umbrella.
Always funny when you see Monumental Network.
Yeah.
It's a cool business name.
Yeah, it doesn't just say Wizards. Yeah, Monumental. It's got a lot under that umbrella. Apparently, Michael Winger is quite the coup. Apparently, he's a good get, and will be doing a good job there. They're striving for you remember, like, years past, the Wizards were trying to go get Masai Ujiri, and now moving on from Tommy Shepard, they went and got a big name in the executive world that maybe we don't know about quite often. But
I'll be honest, when I saw his picture, I was like, "Oh, that's him."
Yeah, that's how basketball front offices work quite often, but. Well-known, well-renowned by people in the exec biz in front offices.
He does prefer to be in the background rather than out front. That's what David Aldridge wrote about. He'll be hiring a GM here, too, in theory, to take over that role for the Washington Wizards, because he's going to be overseeing all this. There's a lot of teams that have similar arrangements to that. You know, the Magic come to mind. Obviously, the Clippers, it was Lawrence Frank, right? And then Winger was the GM, but now he sort of got the promotion. Any thoughts on this, TK?
I like that it's somebody from outside of the organization for the first time in like 20 years or something like that. All of the reporting around this is that potentially it would be okay to rebuild in Washington. Ted Leonsis, if, as long as Michael Winger submits a quality plan for a rebuild, they could rebuild, but then it comes down to what happens with Bradley Beal. The guy is a good player, one of the better players in the league, but not one of the best players in the league, and he's got a no-trade clause, and that's going to continue to be the question for the Wizards and for Michael Winger. What happens there? What happens with Porzingis? What happens with Kuzma? What happens with Unseld Jr.? There are a lot of questions, so it's good that they actually have somebody in charge now, because the draft is coming pretty soon.
Very, very soon. So congratulations to Michael Winger, and it looked like the Wizards fans were pretty happy about this news. Like you said, getting a guy, a notable name at least, from outside the Washington Wizards brain trust there. And also, I saw D.A. write that he could be a good match with Wizards coach Wes Unseld Jr., who also leans into like advanced stats as part of his nightly game planning, and Winger is apparently like hardcore into the analytics and the advanced stats and stuff like that. So maybe there's a marriage there. Then again, new GM comes in, usually then a new coach. So we'll see. Lots of decisions there. Let's hit the beach, though. We got some great questions. First one, I'll jump right into it here. Hello, Engelbert Humperdunks.
Okay.
Me and the boys are planning a trip to Summer League this year. Any tips for first-time Summer Leaguers and first-time Las Vegasers like myself? Thanks and go Hawks. That's from Ethan here in Atlanta. Who's got tips for our guy Ethan when it comes to Summer League / Vegas?
I'll start us off. Do your research, Ethan. And by that, I mean know the faces of front office executives like Michael Winger. Know the faces of assistant GMs because it is an NBA convention. You see everyone. You want to impress your buds? Say, hey, that's Michael Winger. You know his background? That guy loves analytics. I mean, you can get pretty deep, extremely deep. You obviously have to know NBA rosters, G League rosters, to just know the details about each guy that you're going to see. So basketball players, even basketball media.
Yeah.
You see one of your favorite media members in the concourse. That's John Krasinski. You might get excited.
The actor? No, the writer.
No, the writer. Come to Wolves.
So you got to know your stuff. I think research beforehand pays off. Again, you're going to see a bunch of faces. Would I know Michael Winger walking by him right now? Yes, I saw his headshot today. But I wouldn't necessarily know him if I didn't do my research. Wear comfortable shoes, I would say.
Yep.
You're going to be sitting throughout games. So why wear comfortable shoes? Well, you walk in Vegas. But also, because games flip-flop from each arena, you want to rush and beat people from the Cox Pavilion over to the Thompson Mac and get your best seats.
Right, because
people are running back
and
forth.
Because you don't have assigned seating for the most part.
Yeah.
It's a first come.
So shoes, baby.
Yes, Gavin.
First serve, right?
Yeah,
when
shoes.
When you said games flip-flop, I thought you were going to mention the guy we saw wearing no shoes in stands at Summer League. So
don't do that.
Bring comfortable shoes or bring no shoes. Either way.
Yeah, I got a photo of someone's feet up on a chair. Nasty stuff. It is Vegas. It is hot. You do sit there for hours and hours and hours. So you can, you know, make it like a beach and just throw out a blanket if you want. Sometimes there's lots of empty seats. You can get like three or four seats. But research, comfortable shoes, and buy some merch because the merch is better now these days. So just to have a memory. That's all.
Okay. You buy merch there?
No.
I have a shirt that I wear.
I've got 1,000 shirts. I've got a bowling shirt. I've got about 1,000.
Golf
shirts.
Shirts.
I got some sweet golf shirts. Actually, I still wear them.
I got a Summer League polo as well.
Should have worn one of mine.
Damn it! Do you have any tips for Ethan here?
Man, I'm looking at Michael Winger here for the first time, and I'm telling you, if I saw him at Summer League, I would think he was David Griffin's son.
Yeah, I see it.
Guy looks a lot like David Griffin. Here are my tips for first-time Summer Leaguers. Go the first weekend.
Yeah, that's my first note.
That is the key. Yeah. This year specifically, that's when we'll be there. Maybe you could meet us as long as you research our faces. But the first weekend is the most hype. I don't know if they're going to do... Like, is Victor Wembanyama going to play in Summer League? That seems crazy to me. The guy's been playing professional basketball. Like, right now, he's playing professional basketball. He's going to go play against some dude who is the sixth man for Fordham University.
The league would love it, that's for sure.
The league would love it. The Spurs would not. Nonetheless, yeah. You have a better chance of seeing the absolute best players if you go the first weekend.
Yeah.
Because by the time the second weekend comes around, the best players have shown they're the best players and nobody wants to get hurt, so they're sitting out, and we're talking to Glenn Rice Jr.
Right.
Number two thing I would say, Tess, you're saying make it like a beach, you got to bring sunscreen. Mm. It is very expensive in Las Vegas. So travel with your own sunscreen. Yeah. Ethan, you got to hit the pool. You got to wear a very weird jersey. If you have a jersey of a player who is no longer with the team, that is the time to wear it. Yep. It's at Summer League. Sean Hyken will take your picture. Here's a couple of fun things you could do in Las Vegas. Get the Peking Duck from Mott 32.
Hell yeah.
We went with Matt Austin the last time we were at Summer League. Order two ducks. You had to order them like 2 weeks early.
I was going to say, you got to order them now, man.
Get your ducks in a row.
Yes.
For Mott 32.
Get your Luke Kennards.
That's exactly right. It was good. It was totally worth it.
Oh, yeah.
It.
Incredible.
We should maybe think about
going back
doing that again.
Yeah, we should.
And the last thing, maybe go see Usher.
Mm.
This Usher show is apparently incredible. Our wives flew across the country in the middle of the week to see Usher.
Yeah, that happened.
And came back raving, and with a bunch of tiny $100 bills with Usher's face on it.
Yes.
Zendaya was there. How was that, Esh?
Oh, yeah.
Zendaya? Nailed it. Nailed it. Go see Usher. Very expensive, but people say it's worth it.
I would just add to that, if you can't see Usher, go see a show. Go see something
go see
in
Usher.
Vegas. I mean, well, if you can get in, get the tickets to Usher, then do that. Yeah, but lots of, like, I mean, Tass hates them, but there's some hilarious magic shows you can go see.
Oh, I don't hate them.
Absinthe, is that still going?
Yes.
Highly recommend Absinthe.
The Gazillionaire.
Oh, my God.
Incredible show.
Very crude show, but hilarious. And Trey said go the first weekend to Summer League, but just go the first weekend to Vegas. The rule when it comes to Vegas is no longer than 3 days. That's all you're going to want. That's all you need. If you do it right, you live it up, and you'll want to get the hell out of there. Trust me. I mean, we speak from experience. I mean, we used to have to go for like 12, 13 days. We wanted to kill each other, kill ourselves. I mean, it was depressing. It's horrible. So 3 days in and out, you're going to have a blast. But yeah, you got to go that first weekend. And otherwise, great tips there from the guys. I like the jersey tip. It is the go-to spot, Summer League, to wear the jersey. Hey, go check out this NBA con, I guess, too. This is a new thing that they're adding this year. We don't really know what it entails, but I would pop
we'll
in.
See. We'll
and
see.
Kill a couple hours, right?
Yeah, make it short.
Yeah, right. All right, so Ethan, enjoy Summer League, and we might be a part of a live show there, too, as well. I guess we'll have more details in the coming weeks, but come see us wherever we are.
Okay. Next one. Boa noite. No dunks. As a Spurs fan, I'm ecstatic that we got Wemby. It's almost midnight in Brazil, and I have no idea how I'm going to sleep tonight. I haven't been this happy with my team since halftime against the Warriors in 2015. Now, here's my question. Not counting championship wins, when was the happiest you've ever been with your team? I've been following you guys since the beginning of the starters days. Shout out to the First League Fantasy and to my man, Shea Serrano. Cheers from Vitória. Brasil, that's from Marlon G. So your favorite moments with your teams, aside from winning the championship, who wants to get us started?
I've got three really quickly here. Like him, Marlo, winning Wemby there with the Spurs. When the Raptors won the 2006 NBA draft, that was fun. Until we got to the actual number one pick, taking Andrea Bargnani. I was actually at that draft, which was just a random thing, the only one I've ever been to. So that was great. The Raptors' unexpected playoff run at the end of the 2013-14 season, which they then rushed to introduce the We the North slogan, that was an awesome little stretch there for the Raptors, where they finally were getting back into the playoffs. They just turned it on. We the North started happening. You know, Drake's involved. That was just a blast. And then it was the championship year, but my favorite game ever that I've been to was Game 6 versus the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals that, you know, punched their ticket to the finals.
4 years on this day, actually, yeah.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, when Kawhi threw it down on the break there, and that was a series. They're down 2-0 and then rip off four straight. And just to go to the finals, you know, I know Nuggets fans are feeling that right now. It's pretty special. And, you know, to win it, that's the cherry on top of the sundae. But just going there for the first time in franchise history is awesome. So those are my three. Winning the draft, that first, like, playoff run, and then Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I'll add on since we're talking Toronto. The 2016 All-Star Game in Toronto was one of my favorite moments. Just having been a fan of that team forever. And then sitting in that arena with basketball royalty there just didn't seem real. Didn't seem real being a fan of that team in the first 5, 6, 7 years that we'd ever attain anything close to that. So that, working it was also kind of cool, being in the concourse and having guys like Muggsy Bogues and Detlef Schrempf and those type of basketball royalty, but the best players in the world enjoying one of the greatest cities in the world. I didn't think that would ever happen with the start, with, you know, Vince leaving and Mighty Mouse leaving and all that stuff. So that was pretty, pretty surreal looking back and just feeling that. Just didn't feel like it was real.
What about you, Trey, with the Bulls?
Bulls also won a lottery. It was awesome. It was for Derrick Rose, and it was a huge surprise, a 1.8% chance to jump up to number one. And the number one pick is a guy from Chicago who actually went on to become the youngest MVP in league history. Happy times. Ended very sadly, of course, come 2012, but before that, pretty cool. Last season, Bulls won 9 straight games from December to January. DeRozan had back-to-back game winners December 31st, January 1st. Bulls were in first place.
The Bulls were back.
Good times. Good times. Good times. Lonzo Ball, functioning knees. Very happy. Very happy for him. That's it for me.
Good stuff. Yep. I mean, you've got all your championships there,
too. It's been
a
long time, buddy.
It has been, I guess. You're right. Next one here. I'm a podcast listener in Tass Mellis. This is for you.
Thank you.
Lawler's Law states that the first team to 100 wins every time. With the recent surge in scoring, we are seeing teams get to 100 with 6 minutes left in the fourth, and in some instances, by the end of the third quarter. The Sickos at LawlersLawTracker.com have tracked every game since 97 and have found that Lawler's Law is correct 92% of the time. Even with the upswing in scoring this season, it was still correct 85% of the time. With the scoring revolution on the rise, should we update the law to a higher point total, or is 100 the magic number still? Thanks for the quality hoops talk. That's from Ben in Berkeley. Lawler's Law. First to 100, wins. But
just
this
leave
year,
it.
Only well, 85% of the time.
Yeah, last year was 90% of the time. Looking on Lawler's Law. tracker.com. Very good website. So I don't think it actually, this season may have been an anomaly going down to 85%, but we stole the term wedgie from Ralph Lawler. He was the guy who was calling it in the NBA. Just let him have Lawler's Law. I think it's totally fine. It is pretty neat. I didn't know that this existed, that you could track on this website by season. And yeah, it's been a little less accurate over the last 7 years since scoring has gone up in general. It was more accurate way back when, late 90s, early 2000s, when there are fewer lead changes over 100, just scoring was lower, so fewer teams getting to 100, but it's pretty damn accurate. This season, yeah, 85.8, last year, 90, the year before that, 88, 87, 87, 90, 90, and then it went up, you know, in the middle of the teens there to 93, 94. Sure, maybe it's not a law, maybe it's more of a bylaw now, but 85, 86, 87, well, that's pretty good.
It's good.
I say leave it.
This is a great website. I mean, this is right up there with wedgietracker.com in my eyes. Way to go, Chris Peoples, who I believe did this. What do you think, Trey? Lawler's Law? Keep it? Or do we need to change it?
I'm sending it to committee. They're going to study the effects, because 85%, pretty accurate. It ain't 95%, though. And it's going down. So likely this does need to be tweaked, but saying first to 100 wins sounds a lot better than first to 110 wins, which is kind of what I think the number should be. But there are games that teams win when nobody gets to 110, right? Like, they only get to 100. That still happens. So it's fine for now, but likely needs updating.
Keep our eye on it.
Yes.
Because you're right. If it continues to go down, 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 then we're going to have to tweak it. You'll have to. But, you know, if this is a tiny bit of an anomaly, though it doesn't feel like it will be, but if it is, then yeah. 90% is good. You're right. Like, overall, or what was it? 92 overall since they started tracking
it? And 90 last year, so I think this year is just a down year.
Okay.
Down year for Ralph.
I do like that they point out on this site, like, the last lawbreaker.
There's a lot of great factoids
on this. Yeah, this is an amazing site. This is a clean site, too. Looks good. Nice on the eyes. I wonder what Ralph thinks of this. He must like this. Nice photo of him there, too. Boom. Holding the mic, of course. Awesome.
Next one here. What up, podcast legends? The Nugget King here with another cue. Listening again to the Fast Friends Fast Five spinoff pod and the part about The Rock and Vin Diesel looking like each other's nicknames and how they should fight to see who gets which name got me thinking. Who looks or plays like someone else's nickname? And what would be the best way for NBA players to take someone else's nickname? Hope to hear your thoughts and keep cranking out the classics. That's from Matt.
So on that podcast of Fast Friends, we were saying The Rock looks more like a Vin Diesel, whereas Vin Diesel looks like a guy. He looks like a rock.
Looks like a guy that would be called
like his
the
head
rock,
looks
yeah.
like a rock. Yeah, okay.
I still stand by it. That sounds... I don't remember us saying that.
I don't either.
It sounds good.
Shirt off, though. Shirt off, The Rock is more chiseled. He's more rocky under that shirt.
Yeah, he's like a diesel Mack truck.
He's both, man. Yeah. He should get both.
It was more definitely that Vin's head looks just like a rock.
Very boulder shaped.
Yeah, boulder. Yeah. But do you have an answer to this, an NBA sort of twist to this?
There are some that I think are questionable. Like Kristaps Porzingis being the unicorn to me is like the funniest nickname that's out there. Because Kevin Durant gave him this nickname because Porzingis came in, 7'3" dude, handling the ball, shooting from outside. We've never seen that before, and we will never see it again, just like a unicorn. And now, like, every country has one of those guys, multiple of those guys. So I think that one's up for grabs.
Sure.
It's kind of becoming a little bit of a category for players. Like, I hear people say, is he a unicorn?
Right.
Kind of, like, intimating that there are several unicorns. I don't know. I don't know.
So it's just like,
unicorns.
And that just means giant dude... Like, creepy big dude
creepy
that
big
can
dude,
still shoot and handle a little.
Dark style. Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess Vic has already transcended this as he has become the alien, which is
that's
pretty
right.
good.
That's right.
Nonetheless, I think that's a funny one. Andre Drummond is the big penguin. I feel like Nikola Jokic moves more like a penguin.
Wow. Big Honey is now the big penguin.
Yeah, I mean, Big Honey is a great nickname. I'm just looking like... like a penguin-esque gait is more Jokic to me than Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond is a bit like a Tasmanian devil. I feel like he's flying around, mm-hmm. smashing his body into everybody. And the last one that was very questionable to me, I saw that Cody Zeller is known as the Big Handsome.
What?
Yeah. Like Cody Zeller, the Big Handsome is what they call him. Like the Big Sexy, but just handsome.
Sarcastically?
I would assume so. But it led me to thinking, who's the most handsome big guy?
Okay.
My three candidates were Embiid.
Yeah.
I think he's got a nice look. Towns, Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
And Al Horford, longtime standby.
Yeah, he's our
favorite. And he is handsome, too, because I feel like he would wear a crew neck sweater to an event. And that's like a handsome look. Whereas Embiid and Towns, they're probably going for something a little bit more high fashion.
I like Horford for Big Handsome.
So whoever wins the series gets the nickname.
The Big Handsome.
It's probably going to be Cody Zeller in an upset, but Horford could swing it.
I do like Jimmy Butler's nickname for him and Cody Zeller, Black Man and Robin, that he threw out there. Pretty good stuff. So he's already been re-nicknamed, I guess. Yeah, I was looking through Jokic's nicknames. The Big Honey is out there. The Big Tipper, I didn't realize was a nickname for him, but it's pretty good. He gets on the glass and tips a lot of shots.
Oh, yeah.
The Big Dipper, Big Tipper.
That's funny.
I think he could be named Mr. Big Shot. Sorry, Chauncey Billups.
Whoa.
But he could. He could with the difficulty level. I don't know if there's a different nickname for that, like No Effing Way. That's his nickname. something to that effect. I do think, having looked back at some old ones, Threesis was Kyle Korver's nickname. That's got to go to Steph, because Steph currently, his nickname, whether it's Chef Curry, I think quite often it's combined with Klay Thompson. That's his best nickname. That's his best known nickname. But this is freaking Steph Curry. So Threesis makes a lot of sense. Just change the game. And it actually is on his basketball reference page, but nobody calls him that.
Really?
Wow.
There, we have a double nickname on
I wonder if that's... Yeah, I'm sure that's pretty common out there. There's double nicknames. Anyways, he's created the three-point shot. Jesus lived till 33. Give it to Steph. Steph is Threesis.
A nickname I've always loved from NBA history is Plastic Man.
Yeah,
Stacey
Ogman. Cool.
Somebody needs that nickname. Mikal Bridges? Could he be a plastic man?
Sure.
I mean,
isn't his noodles right now on basketball?
Right. Like,
he's got a lot.
Better.
Brooklyn Bridge, String Bean.
Right. I just think it's such a great nickname.
Cool.
And I also like it for him because he's an Iron Man, so it's like the durability. I guess plastic breaks.
not as durable as iron, unfortunately.
I don't know. Somebody's got to be the plastic man. Though, here's my answer to this. I think it's what's going to happen in the next year or two. I know he's one of the greatest players of all time. I'm talking Kevin Durant here. One of his nicknames, even though he hates it, the Slim Reaper. What about Wemby possibly stealing that? Mm. Maybe even Chet Holmgren if he balls out. I mean, those guys are even slimmer and taller than Kevin Durant. So it's in play.
Yeah.
They'd have to play at an incredible level for, a decade plus to take the Slim Reaper. But keep an eye on that. Those guys are skinny.
Put a pin in it.
Yeah.
Any idea for the best way for players to take someone else's nickname?
Oh, yeah.
Second part of the question. You guys said The Rock and Vin Diesel should just duke it out.
They just fight.
Fisticuffs.
Okay.
But in this instance, I think it depends on the nickname. Like,
well, if it's a nickname like Threesis, then we're having a three-point shooting contest,
mm-hmm.
Where we're shooting 1,000 three-pointers and whoever hits the most. I guess like playing one-on-one would be my obvious go-to for this.
Yeah.
To steal the nickname, but yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with a nickname for Jokic that's based around tough shots. So like Mr. Tough Shot. How about this?
Mr. Bigger Shot.
Ooh.
Yeah, my first thought was Mr. Hard Shot, and I was like, I don't know. That one's pushing it. But I've settled on this. Mr. Horse Shot. But the horse is capitalized, as in the game of horse.
Yeah.
He's shooting
horse
shots.
He loves horses.
And he loves horses.
Yeah.
Mr. Horse Shot. Sounds pretty dumb.
Sounds stupid, but...
Sounds pretty dumb, but that could make it on Basketball Reference as like the eighth nickname.
Mr. Horse Shot.
Michael Malone, his head coach, did call him Secretariat last week.
Yeah.
So it just keeps going.
Why don't we like call him Mr. Ed?
Like, a horse is a horse.
Yeah, of course. All right, there's lots there.
Okay, one more thing about nicknames. I had to put Junkyard Dog into Basketball Reference.
Okay.
Five players came
All right,
nicknamed
Jerome Williams.
Jerome Williams, of
J-Y-D.
Course. Yep.
Okoro.
No Okoro. Oh. At least not...
I guess they gave him the chain. That made me think
Yeah,
of
maybe
that.
It hasn't been updated yet. So Jerome Williams is like the third most recent Junkyard Dog, I would say.
Is Jay Crowder on there?
No, but...
PJ Tucker?
No, fair. We had a local
dog
Damari here.
Carroll.
Damari Carroll. That's
a good one.
He played for the Raps, too, yeah.
This one I don't think you'll get, because this was one I had never heard before. Tony Roten.
Oh.
Was the Junkyard Dog?
Wouldn't have got that.
That was a perimeter player. That's a weird one to me.
Yeah.
And then the other two...
More of a Tony Allen.
More of a Tony Allen, yeah. Yep. The other two were Daryl Walker in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I guess probably the original Junkyard Dog. And then Mario Ellie, a Junkyard Dog as well.
Hmm. Well, I don't think I would have gotten that one, but...
Gotta have a dog right? fight.
So do we...
Not really.
Well, if a man's gotta have a dog... Does the league gotta have a dog?
League gotta have a dog.
So there always has to be a Junkyard Dog in
the
league.
It's up for grabs right now.
That's what I'm saying. You didn't give us a current player.
Who is the Junkyard Dog of the NBA right now? Stay tuned. After the break, we'll have your answer.
There we go. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. More Beach Stepping Questions in a sec. No NBA playoff game last night, no problem. We're on the beach reading your emails and tweets. We'll get to a whole new batch here in a second, but a league's gotta have a dog, as we have determined, which means we need a player with the nickname Junkyard Dog. And who are we going with?
We got four candidates from the stream team. Going to put up a poll here. Who is the NBA's current Junkyard Dog? PJ Tucker, who I assume will probably win the poll, but also included Jay Crowder, as mentioned before.
Yeah.
He's a Junkyard Dog, though. He probably would have liked to get this name a couple of seasons prior, after the way things went with the Bucks. And then Marcus Smart is a nominee, the Hustle Award winner this season and last, I believe, a three-time winner. And then a surprising one that I was happy to see from the stream team, Bruce Brown of the Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
Different kind of dog.
Different kind of dog. A lot of different breeds out there, you know?
Yeah.
So those are your choices. PJ Tucker, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, Bruce Brown. Get your votes in. Who is the NBA's current Junkyard Dog?
All right. While you weigh in that poll, make sure you hit the like button, too. And make sure you've subscribed to No Dunks on YouTube. Also, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review if you're a podcast listener. Let's keep going with the questions. Got a quick one here. Is Jamal Murray the greatest player without an all-star game and all NBA appearance? This is from Swish at JCRSM underscore 2195 by way of Twitter. Jamal Murray, greatest player without an all-star game nod or an all NBA selection. Greatest? I think that's a bit of a reach, but he's on the list when you start considering it. He's been in the league, what, 5 or 6 years now? Of course, hasn't made either of these. And when you add in his playoff performances, big games, you know, not just this one, but back to the bubble. Yeah, I get why we're getting this question. But I thought I'd hit you guys with a list of the greatest players to never make an All-Star game or an All-NBA appearance. And I tried to keep it to the last, like, 25 years or so. Some honorable mentions to the OGs, though. So I'm talking about guys in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. John Williamson, he was a bucket for your Nets back in the day. Cedric Maxwell leads a lot of people's lists when it comes to this, for the
MVP.
Celtics, that's right. Eddie Johnson, Purvis Short, Byron Scott, Sam Perkins, Big Smooth, Arvydas Sabonis comes over to the league, you know, very, very late in his career, coming in at the age he did. Ron Harper, Derek Harper, Tony Kukoc, you know, back in the 90s Bulls days, and Drazen Petrovic, RIP. Again, those were like 70s, 80s, 90s that are all deserving for some love to having never made one of those two. Two other names that didn't make an all-star game, but did make an all-NBA team once. Rod Strickland, which everybody always brings up as one of the best players to never make an all-star game. Mm-hmm. True, he made one all-NBA selection. And Al Jefferson, never made an all-star game, got one all-NBA nod. So they're obviously not in the running here because they got the All-NBA selection. Current players, Jamal Murray is at the top of the list. But like the rest of these current players, I put it under the umbrella of like, yeah, they haven't yet, but give it time. Or it's just like they've had one or two really good years. Like Jalen Brunson, the year he just had. Tyler Hero, a couple great years coming off the bench. Tyrese Maxey, Desmond Bane, Mikal Bridges. Like all these names, these are all really young players. And I mean... I don't know, all seven of those guys, six of those guys I just listed, probably five of them end up making an All-Star game, I'd assume. Maybe all of them, because they're all great. So, Jamal Murray, yeah, awesome question, and now gets us to the real list. From the last 25 years or so, like I said, 12 best players to never make an NBA All-Star game or All-NBA team. I was going to rank these, and then I tried putting them in order, and I was like, this is impossible. Like, I don't know how to, like, determine, like, oh, seventh to third. So I thought, I'll give you the 12 names in alphabetical order, state their case why, and then maybe you guys pick, like, your top three or something like that. In alphabetical order, the first name, it's Mike Bibby. 2001, 2002, the Kings had the NBA's best record. They won 61 games, and from 03 to 07, Bibby helped Sacramento make a ton of, like, deep playoff runs, and he averaged 19 points per game and 5.5 assists. Like, he's the lead point guard on a really, really good team. As much as I hate him, it's got to be on the list. So Mike Bibby
is great, man.
Marcus Camby, double-double machine, legendary shot blocker, four-time selected to all defensive teams. He won DPOY. Now, this is an All-Star game, so you always, if you're a defensive-minded guy, your chances of making it, they're reduced greatly. But from the moment he entered the league for the Raps in 96-97 through his split season with the Clippers and Blazers in 2009 and 2010, that's a long chunk of time there. He averaged 10.5 points per game, 10 boards, 2.6 blocks, and a steal per game. The guy just put up huge numbers, both on the glass, obviously when it came to blocking. Even the steal per game there, I think, is incredible over that long a window. Nobody matched that production.
The Camby Man.
Yeah.
It's a good nickname. Marcus Can't Be, also a nickname on Basketball Reference.
Wow. Can't be an All-Star, I guess, because plays too much defense. Like, I think it's just weird that he didn't make it once, like as a, you know, a random injury replacement or something like that. Some really solid years. So he's on the list.
I'm surprised he never was scoring more than 12 points a game.
He scored the most, did he not, as a rookie for the Raptors?
14.8 for the Raptors.
I don't think
rookie.
He ever scored more than
12.8
that.
12.8 is his next on Denver in 05-06.
Yeah, fascinating.
But in those thin years for Eastern Conference bigs, you'd think you'd squeeze in over a Jamal McGlure or that kind
of
thing. Maybe.
For sure.
Maybe.
Okay, Jamal Crawford, you want buckets? Here you go. Three-time sixth man of the year. Guy scored nearly 20,000 career points. He had seven different seasons where he averaged over 17 points per game. I think what really hurt him is not just coming off the bench, but this guy played for nine different teams. Like, he played for a whole lot of teams. So maybe that doesn't help his chances, but he's on a lot of these type of lists for a guy that never got to an All-Star game. CJ McCollum, current player. Career numbers for CJ McCollum here, guys. 650-plus games played. He averages 24-4. 20 points per game, 4 boards, 4 assists. Career shooting splits, 45 from the floor, 40 from 3 if you just round up a little bit, and 80 at the line. Played in the shadow of Damian Lillard, obviously. That one year, his fourth year with Portland, he was averaging 23.4 points per game before the All-Star break. Problem was, the Blazers were like 10 games below 500 at the All-Star break. As you'll see with a lot of these guys, you know, having great years but being on crappy teams, it's always going to, like, hurt your chances of making an All-Star team. But CJ, of all the current players, he's the new Mike Conley. He's the new, whoa, that guy hasn't made one. That guy's been in the league for a decade now and has a lot of good years in terms of scoring the ball. But we'll see. Will he make one sort of like Conley did near the end? It's possible. Another current player, I threw him on here just for fun. Tobias Harris. I know. It's a weird one, but when I went and looked at, like, his best window, if you strike out this past season where he really struggled to score, like his numbers really dipped, if you count the last season he was with Detroit in 2017-18, and then his stop with the Clippers there, and then through to Philly, like the last 3 years, again, before this last year, his averages, Tobias Harris, were 19 points per game, 7 boards, 3 assists, great shooting percentages. That's a 5-year window. And I was like, was this guy like Sean Elliott? That's like sort of like what was coming to mind. I'm like, how many All-Star games did Sean Elliott make? He made a couple, two. So Tobias is not going to make one, I don't think, now moving forward. You can argue whether he should even be included here, but they're pretty good numbers, and he's always like that classic third guy on a team. He needs his team to be like running away with the number one seed at the All-Star break, and then maybe he slides in, but, or, you know, would have. because it's probably not going
to
happen.
That to me is the difference. Like Sean Elliott was playing on good teams. Tobias Harris is like the second or third guy on a 40-win team. Somebody's got to score 20 points. He's more of an Aaron Aflalo to me, who maybe may make this list.
I don't have Aflalo, but that's a good one. He had a couple good years. I remember going to bat for him one year.
It was,
Aflalo like,
versus like Lance Stevenson or something like that way back when.
Andre Miller, the consummate point guard. He led the NBA with 10.9 assists per game in 2001-2002. 10.9 assists per game. He was playing on a very shitty team. This is pre-LeBron on the Cavs. But he is the only player in NBA history to have at least 16,000 career points, 8,000 assists, which is a lot, and 1,500 steals without making an All-Star game. He's the only guy. The other names, they're wild. 16,000 career points, 8,000 assists, 1,500 steals. LeBron, Stockton, Gary Payton, Kidd, Magic, Isaiah, Russell Westbrook, and Chris Paul. So it's like, I know you can. I'm like picking and choosing the stats there, the accumulated stats, but that's a wild list. And he never made one, obviously. But he just didn't score a lot, had a whole lot of assists, and he played on some bad teams.
Andre Miller was on my short list for sure. But he definitely racked up career numbers because he was the same player when he was like 22 years old as when he was 52 years old.
Okay.
Speed.
How about this guy for the generation prior to Tobias Harris? Richard Jefferson. Is there anything to that?
Okay.
Maybe. He was probably better, RJ. He put up really all-star-worthy numbers in 07-08. He averaged 22.6 points per game, 4.2 boards, 3.1 assists. Again, he's hurt by the Nets being below 500 at the all-star break. I think they were like 6 or 7 games below. But like Tobias, you throw out RJ's rookie season, RJ averaged 19-6-3 in 6 seasons with New Jersey. On good teams, too. I mean, those teams were averaging, you know, 45 to 49 wins for a lot of those years. So they were pretty good in the Eastern Conference. He's overshadowed by who he's playing with, I think, on his team. But how do you feel about RJ being in the mix, at least?
Yeah, it's surprising, actually, because the Nets were good. He's scoring over 20 per game.
Yeah.
I'm looking at 1 year just a little bit after they went to the finals in the mid-aughts. He got hurt in January.
He did.
When he was kicking ass that year.
It may have been
22 points. So, yeah, that seems like his best chance. Although, I'm not going to bring up percentages when we're looking back. But, yeah, it's just kind of surprising he didn't sneak in there a forward spot in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, like some highlights, too, you know.
A little Sean, flyer. A little Sean Marion light, you know, puts up the numbers.
Lamar Odom is on this list from his rookie year through 07-08. He averaged 16 points per game, 9 boards, 4.5 assists, a steal and a block. I mean, sort of did a bit of everything. Garnett and Weber, the only players to put up those type of numbers, sustain those numbers, benchmarks over that time. Odom was just sort of a little bit ahead of the positionless curve, I guess. Like, he sort of started it almost. But it is wild he never made one, Lamar Odom. And obviously played on very good teams. Played his role perfectly. So he's on a lot of these lists that you see near the top. Jason Richardson. He averaged 23-6-4 during the 05-06 season with the Warriors. That was probably his best year. Played a part on the We Believe Warriors. Mm-hmm. I always forget he played like a pretty instrumental part in the Suns' run to the conference finals in 2009-2010. He averaged 20-5 in 16 playoff games. Really, really good. So, like, you know, high score, obviously the dunk champ and all that, but he was on some bad teams, too, that just weren't winning enough for him to probably really deserve or warranted a selection from the coaches. A couple more names. Jalen Rose. That little window between the Pacers and the Bulls, good. You know, 3-4 years there, he was averaging 25-5, basically. He played a lot of minutes. Really solid player. Jason Terry's on this list. He hit a lot of threes. He averaged like 17-5 sort of during his quote-unquote prime there, which was like a long, long stretch. Played a lot of regular season games. Sort of Murray-like where Jason Terry had some like huge moments in playoff games too, especially during the Mavericks 2011 championship run. Is that what Murray is replicating right now, if the Nuggets can do it here? Maybe. Lou Williams is my final name. Just like Jamal Crawford, 3-time sixth man of the year, consistent bucket off the bench. And his best year probably came with the Clippers. He averaged 22.6 points per game and 5.5 assists per game. And LA was, they were like 30-26 at the break there. So, Lou Williams. That's the list, guys. 12 names. Who's, like, top three to you? Or who did I miss? I'm sure there's other names out there.
Top three for me would probably be Andre Miller. I got him ranked high just because I think he was a solid guy. Everywhere he went, led the league in assists, I think you said. At least one
10.
Time.
10.9.
Yeah, he was a really solid player. I got Lamar Odom as well because I feel like of all these guys that you have named, maybe the most talented player.
I agree.
And he was fitting alongside Kobe and Pau Gasol, and even Andrew Bynum was quite the player then. He was just kind of doing everything, but, you know, it seemed like Lamar Odom could have probably averaged 25 points per game and 10 assists if he wanted to, and it never felt like he wanted to. And then the last guy, I originally had Bibby, but I think I'm going to sub him out for Jamal Crawford.
Hmm.
Three-time sixth man of the year, so, I mean, he's getting his flowers the way he's supposed to get them, but I just really like watching Jamal Crawford, and man, it would have been awesome to see him in an All-Star game.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Him and Lou Williams, perfect for an All-Star game environment. What about you, Tess?
Yeah, and the fact that he played 20 years, which is a very rare club. I mean, one game in his last season to get him to that 20-year mark. There, but, yeah, a special, special guy. Andre Miller, I think, has to be on there. He had a 50-point game. He could have scored more, too, if he wanted, but he played the game the right way. Played it with George Karl. You know, passing the ball. So I think I would put those two guys on there. Crawford, a bucket. Miller, a special guy, special player, special stats. The third, Lamar Odom's a great one. Won a sixth man of the year. So, you know, he got some awards in him. Give me an R, Jeff, just because I like his TikTok work.
Okay. So again, the 12 best players to never make an NBA All-Star game or All-NBA team in the last 25 years. In alphabetical order, I got Bibby, Camby, Crawford, CJ McCollum, Tobias Harris, Andre Miller, Richard Jefferson, Lamar Odom, Jason Richardson, Jalen Rose, Jason Terry, and Sweet Lou Williams. I was thinking, eating breakfast this morning, I'm like, I gotta be forgetting something. Somebody. Who am I forgetting? And then I was like, Andre Kirilenko, he was a great player. He had some great years. And then I went and checked. He made an All-Star team.
Indeed.
So then I was like, wow, Kirilenko made an All-Star team, and Lamar Odom didn't. Because, like, I think of them at times as some similarities, like just filling the box score, obviously Swiss Army knife type players. But, yeah, he made it. Kirilenko did 1 year, and Lamar never did. So there you have it.
Good thing we did this question now. Jamal Murray's going to make the All-Star team next year.
I would.
As long as he plays. Healthy,
yeah.
I mean, he played 65 games this year. That's actually enough to make the All-Star team. Turned it on a little bit as the year went on. But I think with the success we've seen from the Nuggets this year, his rep is going to rise to the level that he will make the team next year as long as he has a season like he did this year.
I would agree
Middleton
with that.
Style, if you will.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah, he got injured. That obviously hurt. What was the debate a few years ago? Who's going to make their first All-Star game? It was Jamal Murray or someone, before he got hurt, there was somebody that it was the prominent him or him, and it was always Jamal
Fox?
Murray.
No? SGA?
I think it may have been pre-Fox. Maybe it was Fox. Nah, I think it was pre-Fox.
Booker?
Maybe it was Booker.
Well, Lee and I used to always like it was the Booker Beal thing.
Way back. Anyways, we'll figure it out. We got a question about 20-year careers here. LeBron James just finished his 20th season, a club only 9 other players belong to, including Jamal Crawford. Which current players would you predict joining the 20-season club? That's from PHX Cody. What do you got, Trey? This is an interesting question.
Well, I think my good friend PHX Cody here is watching one of the players who is going to get to 20 seasons. Kevin Durant is in currently his 16th season. I guess technically 15 if you count the year he missed, but he was still an NBA employee cashing NBA checks. This dude loves the hoop. He's going to make it to 20 seasons. He's going to play another 4 years. I think that is an easy one. He's the next guy to get to 20 for me.
I think, yeah, technically they wouldn't include him unless he does another 5 years.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the
even though he's getting
paid. The rule.
Paid, yeah.
I think it applied to, who was it? Was it Kevin Willis, I think? He missed a year, and then he got to his 20 mark in his 21st season, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
So if you want to be technical about it. But, yeah, who are the guys? I mean, we probably don't know off the top of our heads. Kevin Willis. Dirk, Dikembe.
Robert Parrish.
Parrish, did he make it? Yeah.
Kobe.
How many did Kareem end up playing?
Probably more than 20.
Yeah.
You said Vince, yeah. Yeah, we named half
Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. yeah, Vince the leader in the clubhouse. I think that's a good one. KD could, which is an astonishing one, considering his injuries early on. I would probably pick Luka to get there. Seems like a durable guy. That's what you want to pick when you're looking at these. He would be 38 to start his 20th season. He started pretty young. He started 19, so you want that if you're looking at it. And I think Steph has a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Just because the way he plays. But he started late going to college, so he would be 40 to start his 20th season.
What about Chris
and
Paul?
And he's got a lot of miles on those legs. Chris Paul's close,
Chris
right?
Chris Paul's very close.
Chris Paul is close.
Two more.
If he wants to, he could obviously be on a bench.
Yeah.
Still even playing, like, spot minutes.
I mean, he's technically signed through his 20th season, so.
Yeah. Right. Maybe in 10 years, the answer will be everybody?
We're going to see more.
Yeah.
We're absolutely going to see more.
Yeah. Good question, though.
We only missed two 20-season-plus players. One is current right now.
Haslam?
You're going to see his face tonight. That's exactly right. Udonis Haslam. And, I mean, they're playing the game in Boston. You might see this guy's face as well.
20 years. We said
21
Kevin,
years.
Kevin Garnett.
That's right. But Kevin Garnett, 21 yeah. seasons.
Kevin awesome. Garnett played...
Well, he started so young. Right?
I know, but I don't include him in this list ever, obviously.
Yeah.
I forget
think he'll
that.
Be there tonight?
That's a great question.
It's possible.
I guess it's possible.
Anything is possible. Impossible is nothing.
That's right. Next one here. Longtime listener, first-time beacher. We love to see it. I haven't really seen anyone else talk about this, but I would love to see a Trae Young for Zach LaVine trade. The Bulls are in need of a point guard that can create some offense and shoot threes, and I believe they now have the defensive pieces to cover for Trae's lack of defense. With Atlanta, this lets them go all in on DeJounte Murray. Trae Young also seems to be in a strange state with the Hawks, and the players don't seem to buy into his type of leadership. LaVine can come in and provide a better off-ball solution for Murray while still being able to get his own when needed. DeJounte also friends with Zach, being how they both grew up playing in Seattle. The money seems like it works, but I believe the Bulls would have to include one of Io, Kobe, or Pat. Just going with their short versions of
Pat
their
Murphy?
Names. To really convince Atlanta. Who says no? Okay, so this is a Trae Young for Zach LaVine trade with probably the Bulls including a little bit more, which I do believe. Also, I just wanted to retroactively thank you guys for the $500 from Cash App. A contest that you guys did a couple years ago. It really helped when COVID was whooping my wallet's ass. This is from Antonio in Chicago. I forgot we did that. Mm-hmm. Cash App giveaway in the day. Happy to hear you got it. Happy to hear it helped. And Trae, I mean, you got to start this one off. The idea of a Trae Young for Zach LaVine sort of deal. Where are you at on this?
These guys are on the exact same contract. Like, to the dollar amount. This season, they both made $37,096,500. Next season, they both make $40,064,220. They're on the exact same contract, which is why the Hawks would say no. Zach LaVine is 3.5 years older than Trae Young is. He's got injuries in his past, though he seems to have put them behind him during the second half of the season. He looked great, and it's not like Zach LaVine would come into another team and instantly become an off-ball guy. He wants to have the ball just like Trae Young does, just like DeMar DeRozan does for the Bulls right now. So I do believe it would be the Hawks saying no because they would be getting older. I still think Trae Young is more of a number one than Zach LaVine is, and I don't think that Io, Kobe, or my good friend Pat Murphy would be the one to really swing this deal here.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Murph's a great locker room guy, though.
Brings it together.
Yeah.
See a junkyard dog?
No. He was a pitcher. He was a baseball pitcher back in the day.
Oh, he's a pretty boy. He's a
pretty boy scumbag. You know, baseball players really toe the line.
Yeah, you're right.
He's a great electrician, too, right? Here in Georgia.
Yes.
Pat Murphy.
Yes.
Electrical Murphy company electrical kicking ass. Anyway. All the reasons. I got... Which guy do you have a little bit more faith in into being number one, as you said? It's got to be the younger guy in Trae Young. Again, he's gone through a roller coaster of a career already because he was bowing in MSG in just his third year. So he's only played 5 years. He's young.
Look, it's only played 5 years.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. It feels like he's been around forever.
Five seasons.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
20, not even 25. Like, he'll be 25 going into next year. You think about it that way. Yeah. He's not even in his prime. He's going to grow.
Yeah.
Be better. So it's hard. it's hard to even think about that type of package.
Yeah, he had a really bad year when it came to shooting, for sure, especially from deep at 33%. And he hasn't even been like he's not Steph Curry level three-point shooter. He's not a threesist by any means. Like, in his career, 35%, which you'd like to see higher too. But with Trae Young, it oddly has become where suddenly a guy is like underrated. Like, it's like he's getting thrown in all these things, and it's like all these like sort of half-assed packages, and you're like, he's really good. Like, he is. He has faults, no doubt. I mean, the defense is always going to be somewhat of an issue, and maybe he is not. I don't know. I think it's still too early. Like, yeah, what type of leader is he? But my God, the guy, he's like 26 and 10 in his career, 25 and 10. Like, let's slow down a little bit here with like trying to ship him out. And I hope the Hawks are as well. So yeah, I like the concept. There would have to be more coming back from the Bulls, but I just don't think Atlanta would ever do this. And you said it yesterday, Tass, too. Like, with the Quinn Snyder addition as the head coach, they are at least going to do their moves this offseason, try and shore up that team a little bit, and then with Quinn, have a full training camp and a start of the season and see if they can actually live up to some expectations. This is a team that also always starts like crap.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, come in and have a good start to a season, and you could put all this to bed, which I think they have in them. And I think Quinn maybe is the right guy for it. So.
Yeah, he needs a relationship with a coach. I know the Nate McMillan one started well, didn't end well. The Lloyd Pierce one didn't go all that well. So I think this is important to him. You're turning 25. Maybe that's a part of it too, just growing up a little bit. Yeah. He likes Quinn. He said the future here in Atlanta is Quinn. Quinn's a one-name man, a one N on the end of his name man, and a one-name man. Just Quinn and Trey, I think, could work well together. But yeah, this is the... I called it a roller coaster of a career because this is probably the lowest rep he's had in several years. He went into the All-Star break averaging 29 and like 9.5 and wasn't an All-Star and wasn't voted very highly by his peers.
No.
So that's, yeah, reputation-wise, it's bad for him, but I think he's working right now. That's what the Atlanta Hawks Twitter account says. He's working out right now. So I think he's working to get better, and I'm sure his second year with DeJounte Murray is going to be better as well.
But I think so.
We'll see.
All right, final one here. What we got?
In an unlikely world where both Chris Paul and LeBron James retire after this season, how would you rank the careers of the Banana Boat crew? LeBron is obviously the first pick, and I'm leaning towards Wade for number two. But 2-4 is pretty murky. That's from Creature Skeleton. Well, 2-4 is murky. I don't think so. I'm taking Gabby at number two. Gabrielle Union was on the banana boat. Carmelo Anthony was not on the banana boat. That's one of those Mandela effects we always think of. Melo with Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. Now, Melo has cleared this up. He said he was on his way. And
he was on his way to the banana boat?
No, he flew in. Well, he flew in and he was taxiing from a boat. They kind of did leave without him, and they were sort of waiting though, and he said apparently, "Nah, I don't want to be on that thing. Good, go do your thing." So
how am I going to wear a hat on that thing? So fly off.
That's a great point.
So the banana boat crew that everyone remembers, sorry Gabby. We're going with the basketball players here. LeBron in the one seat, you'd rather have his career than anybody else, but then the debate can begin. Wade, who's the number two, sure. And then Melo and Chris Paul.
Yeah, I think the debate begins at number three.
Yes.
Totally.
It goes LeBron, Wade, and then we can have some sort of conversation about who's three. Is it Melo or Chris
the,
Paul?
Yeah, the finals MVP, he's going at number two. Yeah, Wade.
Three titles. Wade is... I'm biased. Wade's one of my top five dudes ever, but I think that he is a lot further ahead than Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. I think you're taking Chris Paul over Carmelo Anthony. When it all comes down to it, though, they both have the exact same amount of postseason success.
Chris Paul got to a final.
They gave you something for that.
No, but that's not the same postseason success, I wouldn't say. Oh. Carmelo Anthony got to a conference final. Chris Paul got to a final.
Fourth and second.
Yeah. But fourth and assists, you're talking fourth. Chris Paul, obviously people say, Melo's top 10 in scoring, but Chris Paul regarded as a higher player for a stretch. Five times was top five in MVP voting.
Yeah.
And then sixth or seventh another four times. So top seven, nine times. And Melo was third once, sixth once. So yeah, it's CP, even though people have forgotten. It's a while back.
Yeah, I agree that's the order. It's LeBron, Wade, Chris Paul, and Melo. you know, Chris Paul is going to, ring or not, he's going to be considered one of the greatest point guards of all time, I think. You know, there's some great ones, don't get me wrong, but I think he'll be included in that list, again, whether he even win the ring, which it's looking like he may not, unless he picks one up at the end. Whereas, like, Melo, you know, when we just did 10 minutes, like, gushing over how much we love Melo and how cool he was and all the buckets and all that, but, like, I don't think he's going to be, like, he's not going to be on those short lists of, like, oh, he's one of the greatest small forwards, power forwards ever. He's just not. He's, like, a tier or two down. So, yeah, I think that's the order. I wish it was the order they were on the boat. I mean, LeBron's at the back. Chris Paul, then next, then Wade, and then Gabby at the front.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're going to re-doctor this photo, put Melo into the photo, and then put them in order. Put LeBron at one, Wade two, Chris Paul three, and Melo on the end with his hat.
They got to go back and redo it. Like, they should go on a vacation again.
Yeah.
It'd be hilarious if they did that picture.
Great questions, guys. Love that last one from @creatureskeleton. Got to take one more break, but when we come back, we do have Tweet of the Night. Don't go anywhere.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
All right, let's start wrapping up this Beach Steppin' podcast with Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night is actually Tweets of the Day, and it comes yesterday from @SlamOnline, sharing some great photos with a few captions. First one, welcome to the future. Paolo Banchero covers Slam 244. There it is, turbocharged. Is that a Fast and Furious reference there? With Paolo on the cover of Slam 244. But then we saw the full fit. Oh, baby, look at those jeans. Holy moly. And one more with the caption Y2K, just to really see how large the opening is on those jeans, Tass, at the bottom. You could put multiple basketballs in those pants. So, yes, people were loving this. Trey, I know you were tweeting away about this. You're a fan of the fit here, the cover?
I'm a fan of the cover. I'm a fan of the photo shoot, no doubt about it. Wearing the JNCOs. On some of the photos, if you look on his left hip, you can see literally a pair of JNCOs. J-N-C-O.
Oh,
it's right there.
It. Wow.
You know, from the future. That to me is a weird part of it. The future episode, we're going 20 to 30 years in the past for this look, but this to me became like instantly an iconic photo shoot, kind of on par with when Kobe Bryant was wearing those all-white outfits for, I think it was the LA Times. He had, like, the big, tall pilgrim hat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is one of the funniest NBA photo shoots of all time. Paolo Banchero in a giant pair of JNCOs. Shout out to him for being like, yeah, you're putting me on the cover of Slam Magazine. I'll wear some weird pants.
Yeah.
Not everybody would do that.
He's got those pants on that we don't even talk about the goggles that he's got
yeah,
on his
exactly.
head. Like, a lot of people pointing out he's looking like Seth Green's character. From Can't Hardly Wait, which here it is. You know, the goggles, the giant-ass pants. That's late 90s for you there. Tass, any thoughts on Banchero's fit?
Well, the decision to not put it on the cover is an interesting one. to not put the pants on the cover. Because, yeah, they're a little too much. But at the same time, then they sneak it in into the photo shoot, which I guess those are images in the magazine. Like the
no idea.
They may be. Yeah.
They probably are. Probably one or two.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
They got to show those pants.
Because I don't want it just to be an online thing. Yeah, they publish these things. If you're going to make them wear these things. But yeah, good sport to put on those things.
Paolo is listed at 6'10". Okay? That's a big dude. How many regular-sized humans could fit in those jeans? Think about how big those jeans are right now. They're big on, like, a big version of those jeans on me are huge jeans, but then we're talking of a 6'10 guy here. How heavy are those jeans?
That's a good point.
Could I even lift them up?
You could use those jeans as a weighted blanket on your bed, I believe.
Guaranteed.
I mean, I don't know. I went to the JNCO website, of course, trying to figure out what pants these were.
Okay.
They could be anywhere from a 20-inch leg opening to a 50-inch leg opening.
Those look gigantic.
Those got to be. I think those are 50s. They're on the high side. 50 inches?
Like, but that's what it looked like when you lifted.
That's crazy, man. That's amazing.
Crazy. Crazy stuff. Great, great look. Slam 244. Go grab yourself a copy of that. And yeah, hopefully those some of those pics where we saw the actual full fit are in the actual magazine.
Got to.
Yeah, I have seen JNCOs being photoshopped into historical photos. I forget who did it,
okay.
But hilariously done, just really well done on the legs of people in random photos. It's so good. So good.
I tried to find a photo of me, by the way, wearing goggles. There was a definite summer where I was trying to wear those goggles on the head like Seth Green there.
That was a look.
I could not find it. I know there's one photo that exists of me with them at some party or something, or some, I don't know, summer bash or something, but I couldn't find it, so I failed you guys. I apologize. But
shout out to Mike Beauvais on Twitter. He's received tweet of the night before. He's photoshopping Lee Harvey Oswald in JNCOs.
Okay.
It's great. It's just great.
All right, let's call it up. Call it up. Let's call it up. There.
I got a couple circle backs for you here, real quick. We asked the people who's the NBA's current junkyard dog. 44% voted for PJ Tucker. Second leading vote getter was Bruce Brown at 33%. So he's the junkyard dog of this year's playoffs at the very least.
Yeah.
Tass, I need to apologize to you. Chris Paul had more postseason success than Carmelo Anthony. 81 playoff wins to just 28 for Carmelo Anthony.
Wow, 20.
Okay,
that's it.
Going wins.
Now, you would say Chris Paul was on better teams.
Yeah, sure.
You certainly would.
You certainly would.
Because he was on them. That's also part of it.
All yeah. right. How do you rank the Banana Boat Crew? Great questions, guys. Good to be back on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, love the beach.
Kicking around some sand, splashing around in the water, reading your emails and tweets. We'll be doing it again, no doubt, throughout the summer. But we've got No Buffs coming up later today.
Hey.
It was the finale last night. We got a lot to unpack, so join us at 1 p.m. Eastern. No Buffs on YouTube feed, on podcast feed. And then tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll go live on Playback for Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and Miami Heat. No Gabe Vincent in this game. Shams, during this show, saying Gabe Vincent is out for Game 5. The opening is there for the Celtics to make this a series. Can they do it at home, or is Jimmy going to close the door on them? He was pretty casual after that Game 4 loss. What'd you say? He was, we're going to drink some beers.
Drink some wines. And all I'm going to say is we're okay.
Yeah, that's right. So Jimmy Butler's going to be stupid hungover tonight or kicking ass. So it'll be one of the mixing wine and beer. So we'll be on Playback tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, the first thing that comes up when you Google Banana Boat are people just really loving their times on a banana boat.
Embrace the day, people.